From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. John Ellis Bush, or Jeb as we all know him, is officially running for president. Popular former governor of Florida, son and brother of former presidents. He speaks Spanish, supports the Common Core, and is raising a lot of money already. Is he the right choice for Republicans? Can he, should he win the White House? This hour On Point, Jeb Bush is running for president. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What's your take on Jeb? Jeb Bush. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here he is, Miami, Florida, yesterday, former governor, announcing he's in.
Our country's on a very bad course. And the question is, what are we going to do about it? The question for me is, what am I going to do about it? And I've decided I'm a candidate for president of the United States of America.
There it was, after months and months and months, when he first let it be known that he would probably do this. Front runner was all around Jeb Bush. In the weeks that months that followed, lots of other Republicans already in, could be as many as 16. So where does Jeb Bush stand now? Joining me now from Washington, Shirish Datta, White House correspondent for the National Journal. He was Tallahassee bureau chief for the Palm Beach Post when Jeb Bush was governor, when Marco Rubio was coming up. He was Washington editor at NPR. You knew him as SV Datta there, his byline. He's author of Jeb, America's Next Bush. Shirish Datta, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me back.
Also with us from Washington is Mona Charon, syndicated columnist, frequent contributor to the National Review, senior fellow with the Ethics and Public Policy Center. Mona, welcome back to On Point to you as well.
Thank you, Tom. Delighted to be here.
And with us from Miami is Alberto Cardenas, Jeb Bush supporter, two-time chairman of the Republican Party of Florida, lobbyist, currently a senior partner at Squire Patton Boggs. He was in the crowd yesterday for Jeb's announcement. Alberto, Al Cardenas, welcome to On Point.
Well, good to be with all of you.
Thank you for being here. You're the only one of us right here who was in the hall. What did you see on that stage? What did you see in the response from the audience?
Well, look, it was an emotional moment for the governor. This was his hometown. Many in the audience have followed him and have been supporters of his for three decades. They clearly loved him. I think it's fair to say that of all the rollouts in the presidential primary, few have had the emotional fervor this event had. And it was great to see Barbara Bush there and just after her 90th birthday, his beautiful family. And we've been friends for a long time. And that was a site where I graduated from and the place that allows minorities and others, like I was, low-income families to have a chance at a college education. So, you know, it's a great message, a great moniker for the right to rise agenda that we have, and that is to make sure that the underserved and every American has a shot at the American dream. So the site, I thought, reflected that. The speech reflected that. And the governor clearly understands that this is not about talking to a narrow niche of Republican conservatives who can maybe provide him with the necessary votes. This was about representing all Americans and understanding that unless our country comes together and we find common solutions to our critical problems, we're in trouble. And so that's what the speech reflected. I thought it was thoughtful, persuasive, and reflecting what would do if president rather than what one does as a candidate to garner votes.
He seemed to be having a good time, much better than in recent weeks when he was put on the spot to talking about the Iraq War and his brother George W. Bush. Mona Charon, you've written with some skepticism about this candidacy, but what did you see at the podium in the hall yesterday?
I thought he had his best day so far. The campaign until now, until yesterday, he seemed to be loping through the motions, doing a lot of fundraising, of course, which is very successful and is important, though it may not be quite as important as some people say. But he didn't seem passionate. He didn't seem to have a clear idea about what his candidacy was all about. And he made a few mistakes. But yesterday we saw him really step up and look and sound like a leader, look and sound confident, and present a message that was compelling and had some excellent lines, one of which was that the federal government now has become so suspicious of religious liberty that it's even harassing the Little Sisters of the Poor. And he said, if it comes down to a contest between the Little Sisters and Big Brother, I know which side I'm on. Great line. So he did himself a lot of good, it seems to me.
Mona, you're a real conservative. Is George Bush conservative enough for the GOP today, 2015?
Well, this is a question that is very fraught for Republicans. There are, I can't count how many, and you can certainly judge it by the comments on conservative websites and so forth. There's a lot of suspicion about Bush. There's this belief that he's some sort of rhino squish and that he's a liberal Republican. There are many reasons for this, going back into the deep mists of history about the Bush family. About compassionate conservatism, which a lot of people regarded as big government conservatism under his brother, George W. It also has to do with his support for Common Core and immigration reform. But having said all that, what many people who are highly suspicious of Bush may not be giving him, I think, enough credit for, is that he was one of the most conservative governors in American history, and a very successful one at that, who reformed the schools, brought down budget deficits, cut taxes, had the bond rating of the state was upgraded, and he left with 60% popularity. So people should take him for all in all. There are aspects of his record that may not be perfectly pure, but whose is?
Yeah, Shirish Datta, you've covered him for a long time, back when he was governor. He talked a lot about being governor yesterday. That sets in part the executive role there. He was making the point from Hillary Clinton, from his Republican rivals, nearly all of them. From Barack Obama was his insinuation and more yesterday. Is this a rhino squish? Is this a real Republican conservative? What are Republicans going to see as the competition heats up and Jeb Bush gets put before the public?
Well, I have to say, having covered all eight of his State of the State speeches, both of his inaugural speeches,
yes,
many of his campaign speeches back when he was running for governor, this was the best I've ever seen him in a prepared speech. He's not good at those. He doesn't like standing up there with the teleprompters and reading a set piece. And the energy level that he had and the quality of his presentation was very, very good. That said, he's not going to blow away people on the campaign trail with his oratory, and he doesn't have to. He's got a super PAC that's got a whole lot of money, and that's kind of his MO out in Florida. I mean, when he ran in 98, he was able to clear the field. Even when he ran in 94, he was able to beat, I think, five or six opponents. He got close to a majority the very first time out. He's very tough. People forget that. You know, his family has been doing this for a very long time, and they're pretty good at it. And Jeb himself has said, look, elections are a contact sport, or actually says campaigns are a contact sport. Mm-hmm. And his opponents are going to find out what that means, I think, because as we saw yesterday, he wasn't only going after the Democrats. He also started saying, you know, if you're in Washington, you're part of the problem. He's speaking directly to those senators who are also running.
The placards in the hall said Jeb with that big exclamation mark. They did not say Bush. And he spoke to that in this way yesterday, saying nobody deserved this job, the White House, by right.
Not one of us deserves the job by right of resume, party, seniority, family, or family narrative. It's nobody's turn. It's everybody's test. And it's wide open, exactly as a contest for president should be.
Mona, what do you make of that? The Bush name was not on the placards. Father Bush and Brother Bush were not in the hall. Can he get away from the dynasty issue that shadows him to some extent and Hillary Clinton to some extent?
I think he handled it in the speech very gracefully, but there is no way that he can escape the image that he is a dynastic candidate, because there have been two Bush presidencies in the recent past.
Yes.
And there's simply no getting around that, and I think there is tremendous resistance within the Republican Party to the idea of putting another Bush at the top of the ticket, because if they do that, they lose what many Republicans are really burning to have, which is a newer, fresher face, a younger face for the party, somebody who we can say is speaking for the future rather than the past, and especially in contrast with Hillary Clinton, who, as Marco Rubio said in his announcement speech, speaks for the past and is of a party of yesterday. So that is Bush's burden. He may be able to overcome it, but there is no question that it is a weight around his ankle.
Al Cardenas, what about it? Does the GOP lose the fresh, young face option if they go with Jeb Bush?
Look, the right candidate in any election is the best candidate. And every candidate's going to have some hurdles and some obstacles to overcome, some because of their youth, some because of their last name, some because of whatever. At the end of the day, you know, this process goes through stages. We're at the first stage. For Jeb Bush, it's kind of like a space shuttle. You know, the first stage is a more turbulent stage, which he's gone through. It's the Bush identity evolving to a Jeb identity, which we believe started yesterday. People learning more about him, what he stands for, seeing that he's truly a visionary and different. And yet, for all the reasons Mona stated, there are other dynamics in the party. And interestingly, you know, the party's been for 6-7 years complaining about the president being elected and perhaps not doing a good job because he's kind of on the job training. He didn't have enough experience, and we've thrust him into a job that he was not prepared for. Well, we've been saying that for 6 years, and now we have some very good, very talented young men going through the same motions with a similar biography. And so they're going to have to deal with that sooner or later. So some folks have the youth issue to overcome. Jeb has the name identity to overcome. No one's perfect. And so this journey will be a long one. We'll see who can handle their obstacles the best. But I will say this, that since Dwight Eisenhower, without any exceptions, Republicans have nominated as their presidential candidate the one with the best resources, best campaign structure.
Al, hold the thought. We've got to take a short break right here. Forgive me. Al Cardenas, Mona Charon, Shirish Date. We're talking Jeb Bush. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour about Jeb Bush, formally in the race for the presidency after his long drum roll, formally announced, looking at what he brings to the field, what he would bring to the White House. With Al Cardenas, he was two-time chairman of the Republican Party of Florida, Bush supporter. Shirish Date is with us, White House correspondent for the National Journal. Mona Charon is here, syndicated columnist, writes often for the National Review and beyond. Al Cardenas was saying he's got the experience, put that up against the others, gunning for the Republican nomination. Here was Jeb yesterday in Miami.
I was a reforming governor, not just another member of the club. There's no passing off responsibility when you're a governor. No blending into the legislative crowd or filing an amendment and calling that success. As our whole nation has learned since 2008, executive experience is another term for preparation, and there is no substitute for that.
Jeb Bush at the podium yesterday with a big crowd behind him there in Miami. Shirish, reforming governor. You covered him in Tallahassee when he was governor. Mona says, yes, indeed, he was in there as a conservative reformer. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I'm not going to use the word reformer. That suggests that everything he did was good. I'm not certain that's quite the case, but he sure did make a lot of changes. I mean, he dramatically changed the education system. He believes for the better. He instituted three different voucher programs. All of them were the first three statewide programs in the country. So that's one thing that's been puzzling me about the Common Core debate is having the higher education standards in Florida allowed him to justify all these vouchers. And so maybe that's something that he can sell to conservative voters. I don't know. He cut taxes to $14 billion worth over 8 years. So it's kind of strange that he's been seen as a moderate to me. But who knows? That's maybe because very few people outside of Florida actually know him.
Al Cardenas, is Jeb Bush a compassionate conservative?
Jeb Bush is a problem-solving conservative, and that's the main message for America today. Look, no one in America on either side of the fence, whether you're a liberal, a moderate, a conservative, no one believes that our federal government is doing a good job. As a matter of fact, Robert Gates told me not long ago that the greatest challenge facing America are the 2 square miles between the White House and the Congress. And that I believe to be true, and so does Jeb Bush. And so he's coming in as someone who knew how to solve problems in Florida, and call it a reformer, call it a visionary, whatever term we use, he got the job done. And that's one of his that's one of his main assets. But look, beyond that, there are two types of folks running in this election. Those who've been pretty good at measuring what the polls say and figuring out a sweet spot where their positions rhyme with those polls and calling it an evolution of thought. Jeb Bush doesn't do that. And so, as Mona well said, he's run into a bit of a challenge with respect to immigration and education. He's going to stand by his position that America needs higher standards or else we're going to fall behind in globalization challenges. And we also believe that you've got to do something to legalize 11 million people who are here undocumented. I have not seen one of his challenges who are critical of his position say what they would do with 11 million people in this country who are not documented. And the reason they haven't addressed it is because Jeb Bush is right. You can't deport 11 million people. And so at somewhere at the end of this journey, after 18 months, the public's going to figure out that there's one person who had the courage to stand by his convictions, and he was right, and the others were more political about it and were wrong. And so I think it's a long journey. Jeb Bush right now is at the greatest disadvantage because he's calling it like it is. But at the end of their journey, his current disadvantage will be his biggest advantage.
Let's get our listeners in here. Eric in Atlanta, Georgia. Eric, thank you for calling. You're on the air with Mona, Alberto, and Sharish.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I'm wondering if questioning whether or not Jeb Bush is the status quo rank type of conservative, and whether or not he's a new, fresher face for the future of the Republican Party, if those two concepts are a conflict of interest for the Republican Party.
Yes, please, Eric. Go on.
In other words, if we want him to be the status quo type of conservative representative, and we're also looking for a fresh future face for the Republican Party, if those two things would be a conflict of interest. I mean, the Republican Party ever transforming is one of the problems is it's kind of confusing, you know, in this day and time is whether the conservatism stands.
Eric, let me ask you, are you Republican, Independent, Democrat? Where do you stand?
A Republican, and I would vote Republican, but just like most of Americans, whether Republican or Democrat, you know, I think from a grassroots level, we're all looking for that kind of fresh approach.
What do you think of the family name of Jeb Bush? He puts Jeb on the sign yesterday, but as a Republican, how does the name Bush work for you?
Well, you know, there's skepticism, I think, but is he his father? Is he his brother? Or is he which I think most of us would view as the rank and file, you know, kind of Republican view, or is he a fresh Bush? Is he something that we can, is he a fresh face? Is he something that we can look to change the face of the party and of the country?
Eric, we've got it. Mona, how do you deal with this construct? Here's our Republican from Atlanta, Eric, and he's wrestling with fresh face versus status quo. Would you frame it that way?
Sure.
How do you see it, Mona?
I think Eric has articulated a view that many Republicans share.
Yes.
And it's Bush, you know, Jeb Bush is a tremendously impressive leader, but his Achilles heel, if he has one, is that he is from this patrician white family that is seen as among the elites. And the Republican Party has an image problem with getting to middle class and lower class voters and letting them know that the party is actually on their side as well. And unfortunately for Bush, and through no fault of his own, it was just an accident of birth, but he does, because he comes from the family that he does, Unfortunately, it feeds into that image of the Republicans as the party of rich white men.
We've got this clip from Jeb Bush yesterday, who's looking to get beyond that. He's, of course, married Columba from Mexico, and he is pretty fluent in Spanish, at least on the stage there yesterday. Here he starts in English, and then you'll hear him turn the corner.
As a candidate, I intend to let everyone hear my message, including the many who can express their love of country in a different language. Ayúdenos en tener una campaña que les da la bienvenida. Trabajen con nosotros por los valores que compartimos y para un gran futuro que es nuestro para construir para nosotros y nuestros hijos.
Hey, Shirish Date is a candidate who can riff like that in Spanish, still vulnerable to being seen as the candidate of rich white men, as Mona says.
If folks in the Republican primaries want to see him that way, I'm sure they will. However, this is a guy who lived 2.5 years in Venezuela for Texas Commerce Bank, opening a branch there. He is fluent in Spanish. In fact, a former co-worker of mine in Tallahassee was Cuban-American, and he says that Jeb's Spanish was grammatically and every other way better than Marco Rubio's, who actually spoke it in his home growing up. So,
why would that be? Is it some kind of why would that be?
Well, I think it has to do with the dialects and that Jeb learned it as a formal construct in school and so on. But nonetheless, I mean, the last time the Republicans won California was 1988, which coincidentally was the year that Jeb and Columba were going up and down the state campaigning for his dad. So California is probably out of reach, but Jeb has done this before with running with his wife and running as the fusion candidate. And, you know, he was just out in Puerto Rico. He won the Puerto Rican primary for his dad in 1980, in fact, back in his first run. So I don't know how with three kids who are fluent in Spanish, who look Hispanic, and his wife, I don't know how he can be accused of being the WASP from Maine. I mean, he lived in Miami for a reason, and it was to be part of that culture.
Al Cardenas put Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio up against one another on this front. Who looks better positioned to appeal to this rising portion of the American electorate, the Latino portion?
Well, look, everyone at that rally yesterday, to a person, likes Marco Rubio. And everyone at that rally, to a person, loves Jeb Bush. He's earned it for 30 years. Marco Rubio has done an excellent job as a fast-rising star. But the overwhelming response was, it's Jeb's time. Marco can wait. And that was the overwhelming response at the rally. I think most Floridians feel that way. I think to address your question directly, there's a reason why the three Cuban American members of Congress from South Florida all support Jeb Bush. There's a reason why every former Senator Mel Martinez, former Congressman Lincoln Diaz-Balart, myself, every Cuban American leader through the past two decades has supported Jeb Bush. And the reason for that is everyone likes Marco Rubio. Everybody supports Marco Rubio. Everybody wishes he stayed in the Senate for a bit. He's doing a great job there and would want Jeb Bush to be a nominee. And so that's how the community down here feels about it. And then the other point I wanted to make is, look, if everybody in America gets to know Jeb Bush like we did in Florida, he'll win the nomination. I've been humbled by how little people know about Jeb Bush outside of my state. And it's a long journey, fortunately, because people need to get to know Jeb Bush. As Mona well said, they reflect their perception of the Bush family, for better or for worse. But there's a reason why his stickers say Jeb, and he's done that since the 90s when he first ran for office. And that is, in spite of his family's popularity in the 90s, he wanted Floridians to know him with his own identity, and we did. And so the challenge is now he wants the whole nation to know him by his own identity. That's a much bigger task, and the question is, can he get it done in 18 months? I believe we can, and that's the key to his success.
Here's a call from Florida, Simon in West Palm Beach in Florida. Simon, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi, Tom. What I find interesting is that Jeb Bush has made education his signature issue, as he did indeed when he was governor down here for 8 years. Now, I've lived here for 26 years, and Florida currently scores the graduating high school seniors currently score as they did then, between 48th and 49th of the 50 states in the United States. Sometimes he beat Mississippi, and sometimes he beat another state as well. So if this is an indication of his capacities and his abilities, in fact, so poor is the education down here in Florida in general that they invented something called the FCAT, which was the Florida Comprehensive Assessment Test, because they couldn't cut the mustard in terms of national testing. This, after all, is his signature issue, and this is where we move beyond whether he sounds good or whether he looks good or whether he stands well,
to
actual substance. And your panelists have been talking about substance and how wonderful he is. How do they address that?
Shirish, is it a fair critique? Despite his claims on education, Florida lags and lags badly, says Simon.
Well, like I said, I mean, he made massive changes to education. And
what counts is the result, though, right? You can change it, but you need better outcomes.
No, I think the test scores, you know, arguably and you know, by any standard, did go up during his time as governor. However, the FCAT was around before Jeb. That came in under Lawton Childs, who preceded him, and under a Republican education commissioner. But the question was, did the test scores go up proportionate to the amount of testing that they did? And that was the accusation. It seemed sometimes that the governor was as interested in having fights with the teachers' unions over teacher tenure and testing and so forth as he was in terms of actually improving the quality of the public education system. So
well, you know, Tom,
that was a major criticism.
This is Al Cardenas. I'm intimately familiar, I think, with the education data in Florida because I've lived politically with that for 3 decades. The gentleman who called was persuasive if his facts were correct, but they're not. I think Florida's minorities in the testing process got to rank within the top 3 states in terms of minority education achievement, and I think the test scores went up considerably from where they started. But you can't start at number 48 and end up at number 2, but for the amount of money that Florida spends per student, the numbers in Florida are much better than were represented by the caller.
Mona, the Common Core has had a lot of criticism from Republicans across the country. Jeb Bush champions it. We heard him do that again in his speech yesterday. Does that work in his push for the Republican nomination?
Well, it's interesting because Jeb Bush is a bit of an intellectual. Many people may not realize this, but he's studied up on many policy issues. He's deeply knowledgeable. So it surprises people a bit that he did get on the bandwagon for Common Core, because while everybody is for high standards, the danger is that once you federalize something like that, then inevitably you get federal control of schools, which is not something that conservatives are enthusiastic about. They worry that, well, first of all, that the math standards that are widely disseminated through Common Core at the moment are poorly designed. But then there's the political content. What they're worried about, conservatives, is that the federal government, which consists of a lot of very liberal bureaucrats in the Department of Education and elsewhere, will impose a vision of American history, for example, on our schools, which will not be one that conservatives are comfortable with.
How big a hurdle is that?
Excessively critical. I think it's enormous. And I was noting that in his announcement speech yesterday, he said something along the lines of every school deserves the highest standards, but not imposed by the federal government. So I wonder if that was a hint that he's stepping back a bit from Common Core.
Shirish, have you seen him carve open some kind of wiggle room on Common Core that he might go to?
Oh, he absolutely did. Back in a speech last autumn, he spoke about Common Core and said, you know, as conservatives, we can agree to disagree on this, and that if you choose not to have Common Core standards, then you should have standards that are as high or higher. Now, to the point as to whether schools will adopt this on their own, in Florida, they did not want to. They had to be coerced into the higher standards, because otherwise it just was never going to happen.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Jeb Bush, formerly in the race for the presidency after that long drumroll, 6 months. He's in. Announced in Miami yesterday. Mona Charon is here. Al Cardenas, Bush supporter out of Florida. SV Sharish Date, White House correspondent for the National Journal. Here was George Bush yesterday on the at the podium, or just a little glass thing in the middle of a big crowd there in Miami, going after the progressive policies of President Obama, and by implication, Hillary Clinton, said that the presidency should not be passed from one liberal to the next.
They've offered a progressive agenda that includes everything but progress. They're responsible for the slowest economic recovery ever, the biggest debt increases ever, a massive tax increase on the middle class, the relentless buildup of the regulatory state, and the swift, mindless drawdown of a military that was generations in the making.
There's Jeb Bush announcing yesterday. Of course, he's had plenty of criticism from inside the Republican Party and for a while now. Here back in February at the CPAC, Conservative Political Action Committee, this was conservative talk radio host Laura Ingraham attacking Jeb, saying he wasn't that different from Democrat Hillary Clinton.
Jeb and Hillary can run on the same ticket. I mean, go through the list of things they agree on. Common Core, amnesty, giving Obama fast-track trade authority, a lot of new trade deals with China, the surveillance culture. So I'm designing the bumper sticker. It could be Klush. 2016, what difference does it make?
Klush 2016, as in Clinton Bush. Mary in New Orleans. Mary, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm a Republican, but the one way that I adamantly depart from my party is on immigration. Mm-hmm. And I'm shocked and I'm thrilled that we finally have a candidate who has the integrity to address it, to acknowledge that this is a huge issue, 11 million immigrants that we can't just deport them. It's ridiculous. And so I'm very hopeful about this candidate. I'm shocked that we have a Republican who will do something about it.
So I guess his position is more or less legal status, no path to citizenship. Is that how you understand it? Do you support that, Mary?
Yes, I absolutely. I do. I have way too much experience with the devastation of people in other countries who have no way to feed their families, and any one of us Americans born in, you know, if we were born in Nicaragua, Honduras, we would do whatever it took to feed our families. And these immigrants mm-hmm. contribute in such a fundamental way to our economy. And they are just wonderful people. And I'm just, you know, I'm a fiscal conservative Republican, but I'm thrilled that Jeb Bush has the audacity and the courage to address and help the issue.
Mary, let us pick it up. Mona Charon, let me bring that to you. How do you see this one? We talked about Common Core. Immigration is the other one that sticks in a lot of people's craw in the GOP when it comes to Jeb Bush. Marco Rubio pushed out front on this last year and then sort of retreated. How does this play for Jeb?
Well, it could very well be a problem for him in the primaries, and for that reason, I would say shame on the Republican primary voter for being hostile to immigration. Nobody is saying that you have to be for what Hillary Clinton now says, that she wants to give a fast track to citizenship, even for illegal immigrants who broke the law and came across the border without getting in line on the legal train to entry. So that's a bridge too far for me and for many. But I agree with Mary that that immigration is an issue that the Republican Party has not been good on, and it is refreshing to see that there are some voices now in the party for a more reasonable policy. It's also the case that looking forward, we are our population is declining. We have fewer workers per retiree. We have done, and this administration has just piled on debt and done nothing to deal with the looming entitlements crisis. So in any event, we need immigration. And of course, it's true that we're not going to deport 11 million people. So a legalization plan, not citizenship, but a legalization path seems reasonable. And I welcome the debate within the Republican Party on this issue. I will tell you, though, that I'm a little worried that some of the people in the Republican Party argue about this issue in a way that sounds harsh and unwelcoming, and that's damaging with the largest growing portion of the electorate at the moment, which is people of Hispanic ancestry. So I worry about that a bit.
But that is not uncommon to hear. Al Cardenas, how about it? We had hecklers in the hall yesterday saying legal status was not enough. For many in the GOP, it's too much. Marco Rubio stepped up on this last year and then stepped down again under fire. How does this play for Jeb Bush?
Well, it's no accident that they were there. I'm pro-immigration reform. I participate with a bipartisan task force on immigration in Washington with Secretary Cisneros, Condi Rice. There are eight of us that lead that effort, and we've been working at it for 3 years. So it's something I'm passionate about, but I'm passionate about doing it legally. And obviously the issue is going to come up before the Supreme Court soon enough, but I believe it's a bad precedent for the President of the United States to circumvent Congress on an issue that really requires the people's vote.
Absolutely.
I thought the hecklers yesterday were ill-informed, because the one candidate they should not have heckled is Jeb Bush. And to get up and heckle while he was introducing his 90-year-old mother could not have been a worst idea. And so, you know, my heart goes out to people who want this problem resolved, but we need to resolve it the right way.
Shirish Date, do you see Jeb's position holding up under conservative fire in the primary season?
Whether it holds up, that I can't predict. I mean, it depends on how well we could call the nativist element sometimes in the Republican primary vote in the Republican electorate comes out and makes this an issue. As to Jeb personally, I mean, he left Houston and settled in Miami partly because of the discrimination that his wife was facing there. His own children have faced discrimination. So this is not something he's going to back down on. And I know this was a remark that he got a lot of flack for last year, I guess. He said, immigrants come here and cross the border, whatever it takes, as an act of love. And I think when you think about what those people are going through to get here and actually take a job that really not many people in this country want to do, they've got a grit and an energy level that the governor has said, these are the people we should want in this country. We should want people who've got what it takes to succeed. And these people are actually showing that they want to do that.
Tom, can I make
a
quick point?
Yes.
And that is that there's a lot of discussion in politics about what the Republican Party's position on immigration means for it politically. Very few people ever ask, though, the Democrats, who are for legalization of everybody, what would be the consequence? What's the limiting principle? Are you going to completely throw open the borders and anybody who wants to come to the United States for a better life is going to be welcomed and given citizenship?
How would that work?
I mean,
but the Democrats clearly have said tougher border security, so throw open the border would not be an accurate representation of their position.
Well, but if your position is that all of the illegal immigrants currently living here deserve citizenship, that is an invitation, is it not, to
well,
more
it's
people
it's different
to
than throwing open the borders. I mean, I'm just pointing out, there's been a lot of talk about border security, as you know.
Yeah.
Rich in Trumbull, Connecticut. Rich, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'd like to start out with a little cliche. Apples do not fall far from the tree.
Mm-hmm.
And a little grist for the mill about Bush's. Bush 1, read my lips, no new taxes. What happened there? And 2, Bush 2, there are weapons of mass destruction. Go out and spend. And look at the debt situation we're in. Although I must say Clinton repealed the Glass-Steagall Act. If Jeb wins the nomination, I hope he is the apple who did not fall directly under the tree. And I'll take any comments off the air.
I'm not sure where to go with that exactly. SV, what about it? George H.W. paid for, read my lips, no new taxes. George W. still lives under a kind of cloud that Jeb Bush wrangles with around the Iraq War, WMD, and all the rest. Is this a different kind of Bush? Is there, of course, he's probably going, and his supporters are probably going to assert that, especially from W., who seems to carry the more onerous weight. Can he make that case? Is it clear in his personality and his record?
It's definitely clear in his personality and his record that he's very different from his father. He's very, very different from his brother. His brother, it seems that many of the problems that came up under his watch were because he wasn't paying the level of attention, perhaps, that he might have been. That probably will not happen with Jeb Bush. Jeb is very interested in all the details. He would go home every night with policy binders and, you know, like his policies or dislike him, he certainly knew everything about them. So in that regard, he's different very much from his brother and also from his dad somewhat. Now, as to the no new taxes thing, he cut taxes every single year, even during recessions. So I don't know how you stick him with that one, although he does refuse to sign Grover Norquist's pledge, but that perhaps is more of a personal thing.
How did that work for the Florida economy, Sharish, the cutting?
Well,
economy,
you know, I...
I'm sorry, Sharish, that was for you.
No, that's okay. No, it just seems that it's very hard to say what a state economy, the relationship is between spending and tax policy in a given state on a, you know, in that kind of time frame. Florida was growing very quickly during those years, and so the job market grew very quickly in those years. Is there a relationship? I'm not sure.
Al, he was promising, saying we're going to go for 4% growth yesterday. That's a big number for an economy the size of the American economy. A lot of skepticism today in the press about whether that can be pulled off, but he aims high with the number. What do you see?
Well, you'll see him in future speeches tell you how. One, obviously, is by reducing the regulatory burdens. We spend $2 trillion a year on complying with regulations in our country. That's strangling us, so that's one way. The other way, of course, is with building the Keystone Pipeline and making sure our energy policies add the 30 to 50,000 new jobs that it can, and that's a second way to do it. And a third way to do it, of course, would be with tax incentives to bring the $3 or $4 trillion in capital outside of the United States into the United States by providing those who have their wealth elsewhere to bring it here and create jobs and make investments. So I think there are many ways he's going to spell out how this will happen, and that'll be part of the campaign. But I wanted to add one last thing quickly, if I may, about the family identity issue. Look, I have five kids, and I can assure you that every one of them love each other unconditionally, but they're all different. In politics, we sit down around the dining room table, and everyone has a bit of a different opinion on subjects. And so if you've got kids or you're a sibling, everybody understands that no one in the family is identical in their points of view and their personalities and their skill sets. And so if you reduce it to the most common element, which is the nuclear family, it's not going to be that hard to overcome that obstacle.
Are you willing to see that same latitude, grant that same kind of generosity to Hillary Clinton as she brings her?
Of course, she's entitled to it. We should listen carefully to what she has to say. And I think comparing her to her husband or her husband's track record is just as unfair. And so you can't argue that she should face different, you know, standards than Jeb. Of course, she should be judged on her own merits.
Mary in Milwaukee. Mary, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Just to start off with a couple things. Brother George, I agree with you. I don't see George Bush and Jeb Bush as identical persons, even though they are brothers. I think they're very different, and I do follow these things.
Mm-hmm.
I just remind you that Brother George was the one who brought us to Iraq and financial crises, and also at one point early in 2004 or 2005 wanted to get rid of Social Security. And the thing that concerns me is that I have heard, and I guess this is my question, that Jeb is using the same advisors. The name Wolfowitz has been thrashed about and a few others. That's one question. Mm-hmm. Is he going to the same people for the same information? And my second question, or rather comment, I guess, is because I was around in 1959 when Cuba fell and all the Cubans getting away from Batista fled Cuba and came in the United States and were welcomed with open arms and were given citizenship, I believe, within a year, plus federal support. If I'm wrong about that, you can correct me. But so a lot.
Mary, let me take it right there. I think I get the inference, though. Different time, cold, height of Cold War. Everybody hyper attuned because of that. But Sharice, let me come to you with the circle of advisors question. How much overlap with George W. Bush in the inner circle, the advisory circle of Jeb Bush?
Well, there's the advisory circle that you see on press releases and things like that, and there's a lot of overlap there. In terms of inner circle, zero overlap. I mean, this is totally different, and Jeb is not really known for taking a lot of advice on a lot of issues and then basing it. He'll get a lot of information from a lot of places, but he is his own person in terms of getting his details. And then once he's decided something, he's pretty stubborn about it. He's probably not going to change his mind. So I'm not reading too much into who is advising him on foreign policy and whatnot.
Mona, we've got just a minute here. Give us your hard-nosed analysis. Put Jeb up against any other challengers you think most challenging. Marco Rubio, Scott Walker, whoever you think leads the rest of the pack now. How's that play out?
Well, it's as Bush himself was gracious enough to say, it is an open race, completely open. The polls have shown since Bush signaled his readiness that the Republican electorate is not ready to get in line this time behind anybody. They're going to see the debates, they're going to watch it play out and make their decisions.
Al, when it comes time to do battle in Florida, who takes the home state, Marco Rubio or Jeb?
Well, Jeb's in the lead now, but that doesn't mean anything. A lot of it will have to do with the momentum and the results of the early states. So we're humble about it. We like where we are, but we realize that it's a long journey. There'll be a lot of states that will have their primaries before Florida's, and everybody knows that early primary momentum changes the polling numbers. So we like where we are, but we're humble about the future and all the hard work we need to do.
Jeb Bush, formerly in the race, Al Cardenas behind him, two-time chairman of the Republican Party in Florida. Al, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Mona Charon, our thanks to you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And Sharice Date at National General. Thanks, Sharice. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.